What the EFL? It's the Football League podcast. Happy to see Sheffield Wednesday freed from the shackles of idiocy. Coming up, Championship managers under pressure. It's no longer Fergie time at Posh for a bit. And Reading's hunt for a new boss, powered by Quinbet. This is What the EFL. Welcome back to our weekly Football League catch-up, folks. We are glad to be back with you to talk through everything Football League from the last 7 days and beyond. And we're at full strength again. It's me, Matt Davis-Adams, and Adrian Clarke is back from sunning himself. Good to have you back, Clarkie. How was the break?
Oh, it's brilliant. Yeah, I need a holiday now. It was absolutely exhausting. But yeah, no, it was great fun. I've got to say, I know I sent you a couple of vids of me pretending to be cool and with it. But yeah, it was great holiday. But back to business. But what's all this? I missed one show and you get three EFL managers on. Unbelievable.
Yeah, I don't think it's going to be happening again, given that two of them lost and one of them drew from a winning position. we had a good go anyway. Sam Parkin also back with us. You okay, Sam? I mean, I say that. I've literally just done another podcast with you, so I know that you're all right.
I'm all right. Yeah, it wasn't a vintage weekend. I think every friend of mine that's still in the game, managing or otherwise, lost at the weekend, which doesn't happen too often, including, well, one got a point, including the two chaps that were on last week. I can't believe Clarkie's showboating to the extent that he's going for warm winter weather training whilst romping home in the predictions. Normally you go when you need to kickstart a squad's morale. He's taking the mic out of us, man.
At least he didn't pick up an injury while he was there. All right, we're going to get to some news shortly. Firstly, let me remind you of the offer from our partners, Quinbet, where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18 plus for new UK customers only. Visit gamblerware.org for information on responsible gambling. As I say, we're going to start today with some news. And as you'll no doubt be aware, Sheffield Wednesday have been placed in administration and hit with an automatic 12-point deduction by the EFL. Means the Owls are on minus 6 points, 16 from safety at the foot of the table. There is optimism, though, amongst supporters, primarily because Stéphane Chancery's time as chairman is effectively over, to the point his name has been removed from the seats in the North Stand at Hillsborough. Fans who had boycotted games returned in their droves for the defeat against Oxford at the weekend. More than 27,000 watched on. How about this? Joint Administrator Chris Wigfield said on Saturday night, hopefully, since the announcement, over £200,000 has been spent in the club shop. We sold 9,000 tickets for the match in just 24 hours. The kiosks were packed, fans buying food and beer, and every bit of that support matters more than you can imagine. We came into this situation with only 24 hours to prepare for the weekend and very little cash available, but your response has been overwhelming. You've given us hope and a fighting chance. Our job now is to keep that momentum going. Sounds like there's lots of interested parties in taking over one of English football's grand old institutions as well. Sam, this is a situation that you've been in before as a player. Tell us, how are the Sheffield Wednesday players feeling at the moment? I guess everybody at the club's relieved, if a little bit trepidatious.
Yeah, there's definitely a sense of you're going into the unknown, I think. Yeah, I think we tried to just separate ourselves when I was at Luton. We did have to go and sit in lots of meetings with vocabulary that was almost a little bit comical at times for us players who were just preparing for training and for games. And you were getting drawn into quite a lot of the logistical side of what administration meant and what have you. I think essentially for the players, they'll be feeling more confident they're probably going to get their wages. And also the ones that are on the longer contracts going to be part of a team that's got an opportunity of being a success again. I think for the supporters, there is going to be a little bit more pain in the short term. Obviously, the results aren't going to turn around on the pitch. It's going to be a season where, yeah, they can create a little bit of a siege mentality, but they're basically hoping that a bit of a miracle can occur before their eyes. But the reality is they've been in League One relatively recently, and those supporters won't turn their nose up at that. They'll fill the stadium. I'm sure if they can get the right owners and they can start to rebuild again, they will be, you know, a power again in a few years' time. You know, Luton, it took a bit longer because obviously they fell into the National League, which is incredibly difficult to get out of. But the owners are still in situ now, and we know what became of that Luton Town horror story. They went all the way back to the Premier League. So, yeah, it's great that there's optimism because, and I say it so frequently, I cannot still really fathom that a club like Bury, you know, fell out of existence, having the infancy of my professional career, played against them most seasons. So for Sheffield Wednesday, as you say, an institution, one of the most famous clubs in this country, to be close to the brink, or, you know, that was certainly a potential that was being rumoured in the last 6 months or so. Brilliant to have some positive news for the supporters.
David Cogan is the first chair of English football's new independent regulator. This is the first big task for him because we want new owners, but we want decent ones as well. In terms of what's going to happen for the rest of the season, Clark, Henrik Pedersen talking up the fact that there's still more than 100 points to play for, but relegation feels inevitable. But we've mentioned this before, haven't we? That's not really the point. It's the club continuing in its current form that really matters.
I think it's been a great week for Sheffield Wednesday. I really do. The fans have a reason to celebrate. You know, the former owner was an absolute nightmare, and you know, the fact that they painted those seats, you know, instantly overnight shows the level of hate towards him. Yeah, they can look forward now. There'll be loads of interested parties, I'm sure, and they can build. And yeah, of course, this season might not be a complete lost cause. They produced one miraculous recovery from near certain relegation, didn't they? A couple of years ago under Danny Rowell. So they can do it, but that's not what it's about. If they go down, it'll still be a buoyant club because they'll have new owners with new ambition and hopefully good finances. And the thing from the regulator here, what they've got to make sure happens is that they don't just pass the test at the start. It's about passing the test as they go, isn't it? They've got to review these owners on a regular basis to see whether they are delivering on their promises. And if they're not, they need to be moved on. So, hopefully start of a great new era for the Owls.
Yeah, fingers crossed. Everything's looking up, if not in terms of the league table for Sheffield Wednesday. Sackings of managers, they always provide us with plenty of content, albeit it's a risk recording a podcast on a Monday morning because you're never going to know what's going to happen between now and me pressing publish. A couple that we do know about in League One, though, Peterborough United have parted company with Darren Ferguson, their bottom of League One. Saturday's 2-1 defeat by Blackpool proved to be his final game in charge of his fourth spell. Owner Darren McAntony said, "The gaffer is, for me, the greatest manager in the club's history, and one I'll always consider to be part of my family and the club's family. From Monday onwards, we start healing and moving forward. Goodbye, legend, and thank you." That's happened, didn't it, Adrian?
I enjoyed that. I enjoyed it. It was a nice statement from Darren McAntony. It was just getting over that Irish accent. I mean, it wasn't like for like, was it? But I applauded it. I think the change probably had to be made, but I also think that the club's policy is sort of done for Darren Ferguson. Just too many young players, just way too many young players. I know they tried at the last minute to bring in a bit of experience with Tom Lees and one or two others, but so many kids, and they lost loads of quality. You know, they're a selling club, aren't they? And then they regenerate. That's how they've had their success. But Kyprianou, Poku, Mothersill, Jay Jones, Fernandez, Aiden, Jack Sparks, all left in the summer. And the ones who've come in just haven't been at the same level, really. Can't score goals. Poku was guaranteed, wouldn't he? He'd get 10 to 15. Jay Jones and Mothersill, they'd chip in with plenty as well. This season, Lindgren, Leonard, two strikers, Lolos, number 10, Lisby, winger. No league goals at all between them. They're the joint lowest scorers in League One as well. Just 10, only won once at home, 5 points adrift of safety. They couldn't carry on. I think they have to try and breathe new life into the dressing room. But for me, it's more of a policy failure than something that Darren Ferguson has particularly done wrong here. He's just been left with, you know, a team that's not quite good enough to play the football that he wants them to play.
Speaking of policy, shout out to admin of the Peterborough United X account, because their tweet revealing the information just said Chairman Darren McAntony has issued the following statement, and then you have to click the link to actually read it. That's how you get 1.4 million impressions on a Twitter post. Sam, Luke Williams is somebody who you know. He's as short as 1-6 to be the next man in. Matt Bloomfield and Steve Evans also being mentioned in dispatches, but that would tell me that maybe Williams is already on his way.
Yeah, Steve Evans lives there, doesn't he, and been there before. I can't think that he's made this decision without a contingency plan in place. So I'd imagine that's going to be made imminently, that announcement. I suppose just following on from what Clarkey said, a lot of youth, the youngest average starting 11 in a division, no surprise there. Luke's background obviously was at Tottenham, working with a lot of young players at Swindon. Are they good enough maybe to play that way in League One, or does that leave them open to concede more goals? That's a risk. I think Luke Williams was a little bit more flexible maybe at Swansea. I think that kind of notion that it's possession at all costs and real risk-taking from the back, I'm not sure I saw that 100% of the time at Swansea. So if he can... yeah, probably go in there with the notion and the reality that it can't be total football, probably with a team in the third tier that's really struggling at both ends of the pitch, then absolutely, Luke, you'd give him that opportunity, because his last job was at Swansea where he had some great results, some great times. So yeah, it might be a good fit that for him to rebuild for a really ambitious owner. But again, yeah, I think when you have such a huge overhaul of squad, and they've worked miracles in the past, polishing gems, getting lads out of the non-league, and have had enough firepower to carry them, probably being quite an open side. Obviously, this group of players doesn't measure up to what they've had previously. So not all at Ferguson's door. Absolutely agree with Clarkey on that.
Well, another axe has swung in League One as Reading have sacked Noel Hunt. The Royals 19th in the table, have only won 3 of 14 games, only a couple of points off the relegation zone after drawing at home to Doncaster. Chairman Rob Couig said that it had been a difficult decision to part with Hunt, but results had not reached the level required. Clarkey, we talked about them wanting a quiet season after all that they've been through off the pitch in the last couple of years, but there comes a point where you've got to make some noise, right? And that point is where you're looking at a season trying not to fall into League Two.
Yeah, I completely agree. Yeah, I feel like it was just a little bit meh. You know, no, it's just, you know, no, it's not really a tactical term, but it was just a bit uninspired, tactically a bit wayward as well. Like they wanted to control games, but they didn't really have that much drive about them. They certainly didn't score enough goals, only got more than one goal in a game on 3 occasions this season in the league. So, you know, they've been relying on their defence to sort of, you know, get them points. It's not easy. I mean, they've only lost 5. That's the same as Wimbledon, who are in the playoffs. So, in one sense, they've been hard to beat and they've been in every game, like really in it. I think 2-0 is their worst defeat. And I think both of those come at the start of this season. So, since like mid-August, they haven't lost a game by more than one goal, but they just keep drawing. And they keep producing unexciting performances where they have a lot of the ball but don't really do enough with it. So that's caused frustration in the ground. Rob Couig doesn't want to upset the fans. He wants to get on side with them, doesn't he? So I think, you know, it was an obvious decision to come to. So it'll be interesting to see what direction they take. But he will want bums on seats. He will want a manager that produces, I think, more excitement.
It was a reasonable appointment at the time, I think, Sam, because he was cheap and available, and that was all that Reading were really interested in at that point. If I can borrow one of your much-used words on this podcast, this stinks of Matt Bloomfield to me. Anybody else leaping out at you?
Well, certainly there was a strong rumour a few weeks ago about Gareth Ainsworth because of that obvious relationship with Rob Couig. So, listen, I think it would be a big surprise if Ainsworth moved again at this juncture, or albeit I think that would be down the road for him, wouldn't it, from where he lives. So different time, that would probably be a one that I could see. Matt Bloomfield, yeah, it'd be I wouldn't say it would be a risk for him, but I mean, for him to jump straight back into the blood and thunder of the EFL after, you know, a pretty testing few months at Luton, maybe raise a few eyebrows. But yeah, we'll wait and see where they go. I think he deserves credit, Noel Hunt, for what he did last season. I think that they only just missed out on the playoffs. I saw a lot of it kind of, a lot of credit going to him, but also he had Nigel Gibbs alongside him, who's I think got a really good reputation. He went off to West Brom in the summer, so maybe he had that real experience to lean on during the tail end of last season and this year. Yeah, I just don't think the structure of the team and the way the team necessarily been playing, you know, the way that the patterns and what have you, I don't think it's been that evident to the supporters. So as Clarkey says, it's been a bit meh. But not a disaster, and especially off the back of, you know, beating Northampton and drawing at home to Doncaster. That looks a little bit harsh, but I think it's a decision that's been in the making for a few months now, and we'll see which way they go.
Yeah, they got Carlisle at home in the first round of the Football Association Challenge Cup on Saturday. And next, we are going to turn our attention to the Championship. Lots of managers feeling the heat in Tier 2, but Valerian Ismail called some of that directed at him by overseeing a first-time win of the season as Blackburn came from behind to beat Southampton, climb out of the bottom three as a result and drag their opponents deeper into trouble. Feel like we shouldn't be getting carried away with this from a Blackburn perspective, Adrian, but much needed for their gaffer, if nobody else.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, no, this is a big win, really big win for Valerian Ismail. He switched, hasn't he, to 3-4-1-2. The formation's changed in the last three matches, and I think that was down to the fixtures and obviously the fact they weren't doing very well. They lost to Coventry playing that way. They lost to Sheffield United playing that way. And they've got Leicester next. And this was Southampton. So that run of games was always going to be hard. So he'd gone with the back three. They've lost those two games, but he stuck with it. He didn't panic. He didn't suddenly say, oh, no, this isn't working. I better go back to what we were doing before. No, he stuck to it. And this time it worked really well. And it was their best attacking performance of the season by a mile. 3.2 expected goals. Brilliant. 18 shots, 5 big chances. Bit of a lucky first goal when the fullback sort of crosses it and it goes straight in, but they absolutely deserved it. Front two, new look front two of sorts, I guess, Hashi and Johnson playing together. I think the back three is good. Lewis Miller, who had an excellent game, Wharton, McLaughlin, you know, they can build from that. Taylor Gardner Hickman had a brilliant match, created 4 chances, was sort of all over the place. So, yeah, I think after what's been a pretty, you know, miserable season so far, this performance will give Rovers supporters a little bit of hope, actually. So, Sam's going to talk about Southampton, but shocker from them.
Yeah, dodgy goals conceded. I'm going to have to wheel out again, I'm afraid. Sam will still be in a job when the pod drops. He said it was the same story on a different day. We should be 3-0 up. We make 2 mistakes, defend poorly, and then concede 2 really soft goals. That is almost the perfect summation of this game, I would say.
Yeah, I mean, he's getting a lot of flack, and you can understand it. That's the world we live in. A lot of criticism, the full-time whistle the other day. I think he was held in such high esteem, you know, having not ever managed in this country, that I can't see them making a change right now. But, you know, Southampton's clearly a really well-supported club and have been a Premier League club for many a year. So there is that huge expectation there, and they have to do better. You know, the reality is, you know, they're not winning games, but I think Sport Republic, the ownership kind of model, were getting a lot of that criticism as well, probably based on recruitment. And I look at the team, I mean, there was this sense that he wanted to be a back four, his team to be a back four. All of a sudden, they went to that, and now they're back with 3 centre-halves playing. I think the big criticism from the supporters from the weekend was the substitution of Cienza, who scored a brilliant goal, actually. It's a lovely little roll with the studs and little clipped finish for Jack Stevens, who's been a great player for them, but maybe not a mainstay currently. That drew criticism, given that the game...
midfield, didn't he, Sam?
Yeah. So, I mean, the game's on a bit of a knife edge, you know what I mean, at that moment as well, and you still... I think with the attacking armoury that Southampton have got, you still want to have the impetus to go and score more goals. I think he's right to an extent, because the statistics do back up that Southampton are spurning a lot of good chances. 5th for big chances, they are 3rd for XG, 3rd most shots, and that's not translated in the amount of goals they're scoring or where they are sitting currently in the league. The big moment, I think, was obviously Armstrong's 1v1. If that goes 2-0 at that point, then we're probably talking about a completely different outcome. So another game where they didn't take their chances, and there is a flimsiness about Southampton, which teams in the Championship, especially at home, are going to prey on. So massive couple of weeks. I just don't feel, I don't get the sense, given, you know, the clout he had, that he won't get given a little bit more time.
All right, we shall see on that one. Marty Cifuentes, another manager who might be updating his CV. At the time of recording, Leicester boss saw his team slip to a second away defeat of the week at Millwall. But we've got to start with the host, Clarkie. They're up to 3rd, 4 wins on the spin, 1 goal conceded, 3 clean sheets, and everything that Femi Aziz hits ending up in the back of the net.
He is on fire at the moment. Scored in four straight games, hasn't he, Femi Aziz? He had six shots in this match, nine touches inside Leicester's box. I mean, it was really poor defending from Luke Thomas for the winning goal, the only goal. But yeah, Aziz from a right wing spot is delivering. He's sort of like Millwall's Bukayo Saka at the moment, isn't he? Sort of, you know, everything he's happening is, everything that's coming through him is producing good end product. So yeah, long may that continue for him. They even missed a pen in the game, didn't they, with Ivanovic? Haven't seen his spot kick saved by Stolarczyk. So yeah, look, since they got beat 4-0 at home by Coventry, they've gone on that four-game win streak, only conceded one. And I think the back four is a big part of that. They've settled on one. Ryan Leonard, who I've seen for donkey's years, he plays midfield or defence, doesn't he? He's at right back. Tristan Kramer, Jake Cooper, and Zach Sturge is the rest of the back four. And Kramer's the one, I think, that's really catching the eye. Good sort of good balance between him and Cooper. He's quick, he's strong, he can sort of win those duels down the channels. He's not a player I knew much about because he's been at Brentford B, hasn't he, Kramer, for the last 4 or 5 years. Did really well at Exeter on loan last season, and I think that was the stimulus for the move. And he settled in brilliantly, and yeah, it's a good partnership. So yeah, excellent. Excellent again from Millwall. Word for Casper Denore, created four chances in the game, had a terrific match. Yeah, I mean, Millwall are flying. They've just got to keep that ball rolling, haven't they? But for Leicester, I mean, it's all the lack of goals or the lack of goal threat from up top is proving to be a big old issue.
Sam, you saw them at Hull in midweek. Was that the main problem for them then? And can you see them turning it around?
Yeah, and for 45 minutes defensively all over the place. I think, you know, sometimes it's too simplistic to blame it on a vacant right back, which we see, you know, across the leagues now. We're certainly the two top divisions. I'm talking about a right back going into midfield, and sometimes opposition can exploit that if the ball's transferred to that side of the pitch quickly. And they did really well, Hull, in the wide areas. Miller, I'm talking about, who is someone we've spoken about previously on the pod. When he's fit and firing, he exposed Chowdhury in the first 45 minutes. And I think it's not a road I go down too frequently, but the kind of attitude of the Leicester players to get back in, you know, that real determination, that wasn't obvious to me in that opening 45 minutes. You know, opposition players just busting the gut a little bit more than the Leicester players running back towards their own goal. And I just think there's a disconnect between the supporters and the players right now, this squad, you know, because of the way they've started this championship season after relegation. And this was a perfect opportunity for them to respond to that defeat, because they did play well for 45 minutes at Hull. Harry Winks hit the underside of the crossbar. They could have escaped which was a kind of ghastly opening 45 minutes with a point. So go to the Den, and it's a continuation of probably that first half last Tuesday. Yeah, and Clarke, you mentioned it, one goal at the moment from centre forwards. I think IU's got one. Daka's been used there. They've got a couple of other options as well. And in terms of the lineup here, Pereira did come in for Chowdhury. Akali came in for Farse. Kind of Ramsey, Winks, Jordan James in the midfield back together, which was quite proactive in a couple of the previous games. So I think in terms of the changes, that would have been encouraging for the Leicester supporters, but it just didn't translate at all on the pitch. And yeah, unlike Southampton, they are not creating chances, Leicester. They are down in the statistics in terms of their creation and of course their productivity once they get in. So Southampton are making chances, Leicester aren't. And yeah, two massive home games now against Blackburn and Middlesbrough, where, no, I don't think they're going to change right now. I think he will still be given a bit of time, Marty Cifuentes, but they need to start performing better and they need to find a way to be a little bit more productive in the final third.
They sure do. And you could say the same about Norwich City. Sorry, Championship managers, we're not picking on you. But Liam Manning, surely on borrowed time after he lost. Both these managers really need a win derby at Swansea. The Canaries are second from bottom. Swansea up to the dizzying heights of 13th. We'll get to Norwich shortly. But from a Swansea perspective, Sam, as I say, big win for them. They hadn't won many at home. First, actually, in the league since opening day. But when you've got Vipotnik up front, you've always got a chance.
Yeah, I mean, it feels like it was a bit a fortuitous 3 points, doesn't it? I think Norwich, Clarke will come on to, I think there was pluses for them, certainly in the opening half, but Vipotnik scored an incredible, I've not seen anyone get the speedometer on it, because that's got to be one of the hardest struck shots of the season. I think my memory's a bit hazy of all the games last year, but I did see him score one on the swivel, I remember, at Pride Park, possibly left foot, around about Christmas time a year ago. I mean, that first one, I showed my son, actually.
Thumped was the word that I've written down about it.
Yeah, I mean, it's gone in so quickly. Speed of light. The second one's not aesthetically as beautiful because it goes bottom corner rather than into the top binsels, but still an incredible strike. And they should have learnt Norwich. I think it was Kenny McLean who actually lost the ball in the lead up to that one. But yeah, it's not a convincing victory. I think there's still pressure on Sheehan. He needed that badly. Stamenich in the midfield, a little bit further forward. He was a plus point. Obviously, the goal scorer, 8 in all comps, only 7 for him in the entirety of last season. For the team, unsurprisingly, with the lowest XG in the division. So 12 goals from an XG of 10.5 and very over-reliant on him. I think they've had 5 goal scorers now in the championship, a few more in the cup competition, but him and Ronald have been the two that have been creating something for them. So yeah, it's a victory, but 100% they need to build on this. And I know Norwich is the story, but I think Swansea, despite a decent points return from the first kind of half a dozen games, they've just kind of reverted to probably what we were anticipating at the start of the season, which is a bit of a mediocre squad with a rookie manager. So I think he needs a little bit of consistency in the next couple of games. Otherwise, the question marks will remain at the Liberty, which seems to have been around for a year or two now, about various different managers.
Doing my due diligence, Clarky, I just had a quick look at the Norwich Twitter feed to see if there was anything. The latest thing they posted at time of recording was Liam Manning's post-match reaction interview. The replies aren't great, apart from a company called Pickle Prince, who say, "He needs our card to cheer him up." The card says, "Forget the Robin this Christmas. It's all about the Canaries." So maybe that's one for the Norwich City fan in your life. But I feel like we've been saying for a few weeks, this can't continue. It's now 5 defeats on the spin, only 2 league wins all season. Lots of supporters not happy with the board. Liam Manning not happy with the composition of the squad, but surely they're better than this.
Yeah, of course they are. Yeah. Yeah, Ben Napper is not doing a great job as a director of football. I think that's fair to say that the recruitment's been, it's stunk, really. It's poor. Way more flops than hits under his tenure, unfortunately. You look at the 11 and it's not as strong as it's been in recent years, is it? Loads of the ball is the story of their season, but not enough punch. 592 passes they made. They had 7 shots. It's against a team that couldn't buy a win at home. So yeah, it was a winnable match. Create 7 shots. So that's not good enough, really. Lost all 5 of their home matches. That's a big problem for Norwich. And obviously the goals have dried up big time. Only scored twice in the last 5. Took off Josh Sargent with 20 minutes to go in this game, and they're chasing a goal, you know. So that's maybe not going to go. I know that there was talk that he wasn't 100% well, but even so, it's not a great look. So yeah, lots of things for Liam Manning to work on. Not least, I think, is what they do in second halves of games, because they've been rubbish. They've been absolute garbage in the second half of matches. First half of games, Norwich are normally in it. They're either leading or they're on level terms. Tactically, they set themselves up pretty well. But it is Liam Manning's decision-making in-game that has caused a lot of issues. Changing shape, maybe needlessly, maybe getting things wrong. I'll read you some stats. Goal difference in second halves this season for Norwich is scored 4, conceded 12. So only scored 4 second-half goals all season. Away from home, they've scored once in the second half of a game all season, conceding 6. And that one goal came against 10 men Blackburn in injury time. I mean, what's going wrong? Like, are they not fit enough? You know, he's not getting any impact off the bench, clearly. Is he reading games as well as he should do? I'm a Liam Manning fan. I thought he was excellent at Bristol City, but this Norwich team, they look nice and they look well set up and well organised, but yeah, he's getting terrible results, aren't they? So I think he's in last chance saloon. Last chance. If he doesn't go now, he absolutely needs to win the next game.
All right, a lot of pressure on him then. We shall see whether he can survive it. That'll do for Championship chat for now. We'll turn our attention to League One next. Right, let's flip the script of the show and talk about a positive managerial story from the weekend. Jack Wilshere got his first win as Luton boss. The Hatters beat the Cobblers of Northampton in the old school fashioned derby. A closely fought game, but I guess Adrian makes that buy-in for players and supporters a bit easier for Jack Wilshere now after this.
Yeah, definitely. Obviously, not the best start, losing 2-0 at home to Mansfield. But what we saw in that game was them creating chances against Mansfield. It was the second highest expected goals they'd had all season against Mansfield. In this game, they eclipsed that. 2.31 XG, second highest of the season. So straight away, they're creating more. They're making more things happen inside the final third. Obviously, bringing Naki Wells back into the team.
What a miss from him.
You look at him in isolation and the chances he's had in the goal drought he's on, you say, what's he doing bringing him back into the team? But he is the best striker, in my opinion, and I think it's the right thing to do. Give him a chance. I think Isaiah Jones made a great difference off the bench in this game. Great assist for the winner. In this match, they had a lot less of the ball. What impressed me about Wilshere in this game is quite simple. Against Mansfield, put loads of passes, good possession, played some nice football, didn't win. In this game, he thought, well, this is going to be a bit rough and tumble. We're going to have to deal with, you know, it's going to be a bitty game. They made 281 passes. They made 400-odd in the previous game. A fifth of their passes went long in this match. So he adapted to the game, and they showed their class. They create chances, got the goal, and then they had to withstand an aerial bombardment, and the centre backs, I think, deserve credit. Mengi and Naismith did excellently. So yeah, Wilshere's off and running, and I think the fans are gonna like him.
Yeah, probably should have expected this type of game. Two misfiring attacks, I think, joint lowest scorers, Northampton with Peterborough, who are bottom, and a lack really of options down the middle. And they came into the season with Elliot List and Tom Eaves, the culprit, if you like, who missed their most presentable opportunity at the weekend was Ethan Wheatley, who last year struggled a little bit on loan at Walsall. He got a chance late on, which was scrambled clear in the 6-yard box. So yeah, goal scoring an issue and very streaky. They had a hellish start, Northampton. Then they won 4 from 5, lost 3 of the last 4. So it's the top of the pitch, because defensively, not a bad unit at all.
Elsewhere, Mike Duff celebrated with added gusto as his current team beat the club that sacked him last season. Wickham 3-0 victors against Huddersfield. The Wickham account tweeting, 11 points from the last 6 games, only 5 teams have won more. 10 goals from the last 6 league games, only 2 teams have scored more. 69.2% possession was our most in a league game for 7 plus years, as is the number of completed passes in the final.
They were against Sam Mim.
They finished it with the smiles are back. Yeah, Adrian, that Alfie May red card was the key moment, right? It was an awful tackle, and then his kicking of the advertising hoarding on the way off, which drew a wonderful whee from the Wickham supporters, was worth the entrance fee alone.
Yeah, look, he's let the boys down there, hasn't he? Let the gaffer down. He's under pressure, isn't he, Lee Grant? And it's just the player wasn't going anywhere. He didn't need to make that challenge at all. And I can only assume he was angry with himself. And look, from that moment on, it was game over, wasn't it? Yeah, they're really struggling at the moment. They're not defending well. They want to play out from the back, but haven't quite nailed it. And that's making everyone a bit nervous. Conceded goals late on, didn't they, to lose against Bolton when they were in a good position. So yeah, look, Lee Grant is fighting for his job this week. I mean, yeah, you might want to refresh the Huddersfield feed, Matt, well, before we sort of end the edit today, because I think he's got to be on the edge, unfortunately. And I don't like saying that, but it's not gone well given the money they spent. And I don't think there's much of a connection between him and the supporters yet either. I think they expected better.
Last post is, young terriers have the opportunity to meet Alfie May and Josh Feeney this afternoon at our club shop. Make sure you got your shin pads on, kids. Would be my message there. Mike Duff, inspired appointment, Sam.
Yeah, I wouldn't have expected anything less. I'm going to be really nice now because I'm at Adams Park tomorrow night. I'll better check on that car park. Hey, make sure there's a vacant space for the big one against Fulham. Yeah, brilliant. And 3 clean sheets in those 6 games. I think just the one in the previous 8 under Dodds. Only defeat at AFC Wimbledon, if memory serves. Obviously given a huge helping hand here, but Yeah, loads on the opposition's goal. I think Henderson a real plus. Woodrow scoring. Woodrow's a good player, always been a good footballer. Just lost his way a little bit, I think, in the last kind of year, 18 months. Obviously, went in back into Luton and struggled for game time. So he should be an asset for them. And but more than anything, it's just that organisation and that nous that that Mike Duff brings. So yeah, real optimism that that could be an inspired appointment. I didn't have sympathy with Alfie May, but I liked that the Wickham lads all steamed in looking for the tear up, and Alfie May was so apologetic from the outset, obviously probably trying to avoid the inevitable red card coming. But I think he knew immediately there was no kind of complaints from him. It was just ill-judged, mistimed. Don't think any malice, because why would there be at 0-0 when you're, you know, not that type of player? So I give him a little bit of credit for that. And yeah, must have been kicking the gate in frustration at his own stupidity.
We are tight for time today, but I wanted to mention Cheltenham's win against Walsall in League Two, Clarkie, really, so that we could give some props to Steve Cotterill. I mean, it's not that long ago we were talking about how lucky he was to still be alive after he spent all that time in hospital after a horrible battle with COVID that he had. But Cheltenham is a club that's close to his heart, and he's very much still got it by the looks of recent results.
He's flying, isn't he? He's absolutely flying. Look, they made 485 successful passes in this game. Cotterill teams aren't noted for being sort of heavy possession outfits. But the last four matches, the four matches he's taken charge of, unbeaten in, they've had the highest possession they've had all season. So he's got the players on the ball and said, be confident, you know, knock it around a bit and we'll try and play. I mean, they were quite lucky here. I mean, the stats would tell you that Walsall probably had the better chances and it was stronger. But and they, obviously the goal was an own goal at the end. But yeah, well done to Cotterill and Cheltenham. All of a sudden they look like a team that aren't nailed on for relegation after all. They might creep into mid-table.
Yeah, Joe Day made six saves in this game. Cheltenham goal led a charmed life, I think we could say.
Yes.
And I wasn't even drawn to the stats from this game because it was just a continuation of the previous week where Walsall lost 2-1 at home to Barrow. Had 11 shots to 2 on target in that reverse, 24 shots to 6. So they've been on the wrong end of bad luck, yes, but probably bad finishing as well. And 11 teams scored more than Walsall in League Two currently. So I think it's reflected in the stats as well. They're a good team. They've replaced all the lads they lost really well, I think, Walsall. So yeah, a little bit of a blip, but I think the stats show you that they're still a dominant League Two side. So no real signs for concern yet, given that they should have won both those games, I think.
All right, let's get our predictions in as we wrap the show up here. Last week, I got 1 point. Adrian and Sam both got 3 points, a perfect score for each of them. This week is the Championship special, as it's FA Cup, occupying League One and League Two sides. Wrexham Coventry is our first game up as the returning player. Adrian, having sent your predictions in by postal vote last time out, you can go first here. What you got?
What's the game again? Sorry,
Wrexham versus Coventry.
I switched off there because I was just putting the final tally.
The update because you're in the lead.
28-16-14 anyway. Wrexham. Cov are brilliant at the moment, aren't they? On fire. Wrexham 0, Coventry 2.
Just what I was thinking. I'll give Wrexham a goal then and say it'll be 1-3, Sam.
Oh, lovely. I'll meet in the middle. Yeah, I'll have 1-2. Happy with that.
Next up, Birmingham versus Portsmouth. What do you think, Sam?
Oh, I think really low scoring, big pressure game again on Chris Davis, I think, at home. And Portsmouth have been on the wrong side of a couple of tight games. So I'm going to go for a 1-1 here, Portsmouth to get something in continuation of what they've been like away from home.
Totally what I was going to go for. Let's call it a 0-0 instead then. Clarkie?
I'm going to pick a winner, and that winner's going to be Birmingham. 1-0.
Okay. I'll go last on Watford versus Middlesbrough then. Javi Gracia back in the hot seat, beaten at the weekend, but generally feeling a bit more positive. Our Watford fans, that positivity will come to a crashing halt here, though, as they slip to a 2-0 home defeat. What say you, Adrian?
I'm going to give him a chance. 2-2.
Whew. Entertaining fair. Sam?
Yeah, that's what I'd have gone for. By all accounts, Watford were not bad going forward at the weekend, and I'm not sure Middlesbrough are going to have the, either the consistency maybe, despite their brilliant start to the season. 2-2. What did you have, Matt?
I had 0-2.
2-1 Watford.
Oof,
cat amongst the pigeons.
All three scores in play there, or results at least. Before we go, let me remind you, our partners Quinbet have an offer where you can get 50% back up to £25. If your account has sportsbook losses at the end of your first day's betting, Quinbet will refund 50% of your losses as a free bet up to £25, minimum three bets. Even if your account's up, you're guaranteed a £5 free bet, provided you place at least one bet of £10 or greater at the minimum odds. T's and C's apply. It's 18+ and for new UK customers only. Visit gambleaware.org for information on responsible gambling. If you want to take advantage of that offer, the link is in the show notes. If you'd like to leave us a nice review, Apple Podcasts, Spotify, wherever you get your pods, we would surely appreciate it. We'll finish with a quick tweet of the week. It comes from Bromley's Jude Arthurs, who's got a picture of himself right tight to the touchline, about to shimmy away from a defender and fire in a cross by the looks of things. He simply says, "Big win today, 3!" Praise emoji, heart emoji, at Bromley FC. Thomas Cousins, not a fan, Sam. First reply, pink boots, Sean Dyche gif, game's gone. Zane says, unreal you. It's a boring post, isn't it? But that's kind of what this feature's all about.
I'd rather focus on the replies, because you dug this chap out last week. I'm not sure if this has been lost in translation, but this is the same player that we spoke of while Adrian was away. So I'm going to pass the baton to Adrian, because I don't want to send any more shade poor Jude's way.
I reckon it was a few weeks ago we did this. He's definitely not the fella that we did last week.
It was last week.
Delighted to hit 200 appearances, and what, 3 points we go again. That was on the 11th of October, so it was 2 weeks ago.
Still, I mean, we're like, what are we doing to the poor lad?
Yeah. Look, for me, what I'm going to do is I'm going to stick up for the pink boot. I don't mind a pink boot. I'll wear a pink T-shirt. I'll wear a pink jumper if I have to. Don't think I've ever worn one, but I would. I've worn pink shirts. I would wear pink boots if I was a player these days. Just get off his back.
Yeah,
he's a bad tweeter, but his boot choice are fine.
And also what I would say is, from a commentator's perspective, I'm sure we appreciate it when players wear different coloured boots, because it helps identify them. So you keep doing you, Jude, and I will lay off your X account for the rest of the season. And that is a promise. And that is where we are going to leave things for today. Many thanks for listening. Tell somebody if you like it. We're always trying to grow the show. Thanks to Sam and Adrian for their expertise as well. Back with you again next week. For now, from all of us, it's goodbye.